Our World Cafe guest today is Herb Alpert. For Alpert, it all began in 1962 with a visit to a Tijuana bullring and the inspiration to overdub his trumpet onto the sounds of the bullfight. The Lonely Bull was the first record with the Tijuana Brass. They went on to sell more records in the 60s than the Beatles, and it was the first release on the legendary A&M Records. Herb Alpert, now 79, sounds younger than ever on his new album, In the Mood. A philanthropist and a sculptor, he is kind of a Renaissance man who has won 9 Grammys, including one for his album Stepping Out just last year. I asked Herb what that felt like to still be winning Grammys.
Well, you know, I was quite surprised, quite frankly. I didn't even go to the Grammys. I didn't think I was going to win. Certainly elated that it happened. Felt good. I don't know, if anyone deserves, that type of recognition when there are so many great artists out there.
Now, that album and this one, In the Mood, have something in common with Randy Badass. And Randy is your nephew?
Randy's my brother's son, Randy Badass Alpert. He's extremely talented. You know, he wrote with his friend Andy Armour, he wrote Rise in 1979. And we've been working on and off, ever since, doing whatever comes up. You know, Randy sends me these grooves, these loops that they're called, and I start putting melodies that come into my mind on them, and that's what happened with Chattanooga Choo Choo. Yeah, I like that melody. It was written in 1941. Glenn Miller had a huge hit on it. I think it was a gold record for him, and that melody kind of just lingers. So I just started playing it over this groove, and I'm really happy with the outcome, because it's combining this I don't know what you call this groove that is playing. It's electronic, whatever it is, crossed with jazz, my style of jazz, and we put the elegant strings of Eduardo Del Barrio on them. So I think that combination is quite unique.
Yeah, I'm sort of smiling here because, it's Chattanooga Choo Choo, but it's a different kind of train, that's for sure. And you mentioned a couple of the elements, including in your playing throughout this record, you use a bunch of effects on your trumpet. Is that fun for you to play with?
Gee whiz, I don't know if there are any effects. Maybe a little bit of reverb, but I'm effectless. No, I mean, I try to be as honest as possible and let the horn speak for itself and not try to disguise it with anything. No, I did use a double horn in a couple spots. Maybe that's the effect you were thinking about. Because that was the genesis of the Tijuana Brass in 1962 when I had the Lonely Bull.
Absolutely.
And that started a whole something for me. But I started, layering the horn. And I came up with the sound that I thought was really fun to listen to. I'm intrigued with the mystery of music. I'm intrigued with the mystery of art in general. But, what makes you feel good when you hear a song? Why did this song, Happy, have, 50 zillion hits on YouTube? What is it about that song? You can't break it down. It's really... It's fun to think about it, but it's impossible to nail it down.
Absolutely.
Why do I like a Charlie Parker solo? I don't know, man. I like Charlie Parker, but I can't tell you why.
Well, let's listen to it. The effectless Herb Alpert on Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Okay. We'll be right back.
That's Chattanooga Choo Choo from In the Mood, Herb Alpert's new album. You hear it, that there are new things happening with this guy, and we're very happy to be able to talk with him today. You talked a little bit about doubling the lines and some of the effects early on with the Tijuana Brass. And one of the first things you did, you started out in kind of, to me, the beginning of the modern era of recording. And back in 1962, was the reverb on the trumpet that made it the Lonely Bowl was the fact that the bowl was out there in the distance. And how did you get that effect?
Well, I started playing with two tape machines in my little studio at home. And I went from one machine to the other, and I came up, with this layered sound that really felt good, and that was the start of it. But you have to have good songs. I mean, it's all about songs, and I tried to pick on songs that were in my memory, because before the Tijuana Brass, before A&M Records, I used to play parties and weddings, and I had a backlog of maybe 1,000 songs in my head that I could play. And every time one of those songs pops into my mind, I tried to find a way to do them. That was maybe a little bit different than the way they originally were heard.
Well, that's what I love about the selection on this new one. It's everything from what we just heard to a version of Blue Moon, Begin the Begin, some classics from Big Band era, and then things like Spanish Harlem, which touches a bit on the older sound, too.
Well, I did record Spanish Harlem in the 60s, and Mike Shapiro, our drummer, came up with this loop on it, and I just started playing the tune, and it felt good. I don't know. When something feels good, I stop. And that's my motto. I mean, if it feels good to me, maybe it might feel good to someone else. So, and I try not to over-sanitize it. I think it was one of the problems we have with modern technology, where you can have, umpteen million tracks at your disposal, and you can use that to a disadvantage, where you take the heart out of the music. And I think that's why, the 60s for some people was a special time when the records were sweating a little more. When you heard Marvin Gaye and James Brown and those guys, you knew that it was happening at that moment.
Yeah, it was all about performance in a lot of ways.
It was about performance, and they weren't, concerned with, or they didn't have the real technology to, auto-tune and straighten things out. So it was less sanitized. I had a group in A&M in our custom studios. It was a rock and roll group. They were recording for about 3 months, and it came time to do the mix down. And I remember walking through the studio and looking at the guy saying, "Man, you're going to have some fun now. You're going to mix this thing and it'll be, finished." And the guy said, "Well, I don't know about that, because we have the drums on 30 tracks."
Wow.
I said, "What can you do for drums on 30 tracks, So, I mean, it's that type of, options that we have with technology that allows us to, not make a decision. So I always try to, when it feels good, when the horn that I'm playing, feels good, I stop. And I've worked very hard at being an audience to myself as an artist. I worked with and watched the great Sam Cooke, and learned a lot from him. And his thing was all about feel. He says people are just listening to a cold piece of wax, and it either makes it or it don't. And that's, I think that's pretty good advice.
You've described yourself as a pretty much a right brain kind of guy, and as what you're describing, it's not overthinking things like that. You're an improviser, and I guess that goes into your art as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think it's the Chinese have a proverb that says before spontaneity comes discipline. So, like, if you if you're a musician and you know your scales, you know the modes, and you've worked at it, and you know the instrument as well as you can, you let that rest and then just create. Try to do something that responds to your own personal, and here's where the trap is, your own personal voice. You got to find your own voice. You can't listen to the top 10 or the records that are happening on the radio and try to copy what's happening. Nobody wants to hear that. unless it's an extraordinary record, it's maybe a one-time yes, it happens. But for the most part, if you're really an artist out there and you want people to take notice, you got to find your own way of doing it.
A&M Records, of course, started out releasing your records, and then there were so many that very much related to what you were doing, and then it completely changed. And I was wondering about if you had any kind of idea of what you were looking for. What in a piece of art were you looking for? Certainly wasn't all the same kind of music. It was all over the place.
We were not looking for the beat of the week. That's the deal. We were looking for the Cat Stevens and the Stings and the, you know, Police and the... All, you know, the groups that we had were just a little left of center. They weren't coming down the pipeline. And that was the exciting part, because my partner, Jerry Moss, and I gave these artists a chance to develop, to respond and use the audience as something that they could use when they go into record. So that was our pursuit.
Did you find it difficult to sell it, to give it up?
No, I didn't. Not at all. It reached a point where I had a lot of fun, you know, with A&M. It was started in my garage, the two of us, and it ended up with 500 employees. So I just kind of lost the, it lost its personal touch for me. Though I admire the company, I really respect what we accomplished, and it's still going. So, no, I'm happy. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. Like you say, I'm 79, but I'm still having a lot of fun playing the horn. I started playing when I was 8, and I love that instrument. It's been good to me, but I just love playing it. And we've been doing concerts with the same group for the last 8 years, and the response has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was really reluctant when we started. I was thinking that, geez, I'm going to go out there on stage and people are going to yell, I'll play Tijuana Taxi and Spanish Flea, etc., and that hasn't happened. So they accept us on, you know, the level that we're presenting it, and I do a little medley of Tijuana Brass songs, and I'm just having fun doing it. My wife is a world-class vocalist, and she's a great artist. She was the lead singer with Brazil 66 when they first started. And that's her voice on Mashkinada and Fool on the Hill and the other records that Sergio Mendes had in the early days that I produced, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, part of what is fantastic about this album and about this tour is that you and Lani just work so well together and have for years, obviously. Could you maybe pick one of your favorites of her vocals from In the Mood for us to play now?
Well, you know, we did this interesting cut called Don't Cry that Bill Cantos, our keyboard player, came up with this loop concept, and it kept developing, and then, you know, Lani's, you know, put her talent on that.
This is Don't Cry from the new Herb Alpert album called In the Mood.
Just open.
Lonnie Hall on vocals with our guest today, Herb Alpert, playing trumpet and on this wonderful new album called In the Mood out on Shout Factory. And we're having a chance to talk with Herb about creating in many mediums and his life giving back so much as he continues to do that. Now, were you an artist when you were a kid, or is that a later life thing that happened? I know you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, I've been painting for like maybe 45 years or so. You know, when I was traveling around the world with the Tijuana Brass, I used to go to museums, and I found myself gravitating towards the modern art section. And I got intrigued by seeing, you know, these paintings that were in museums, you know, like a black painting with a purple dot in the center or on the side, and a green painting with a black dot leaning up, a surfboard leaning up against the wall. I said, let me try that. That looks like fun. So anyways, I bought some paints, canvas, and I started, you know, like moving colors around like a monkey. You know, you just kind of do something that made sense. And I got this one painting that I really liked. I thought, maybe I'm onto something. I couldn't wait to see it in the morning. And when I approached it that next morning, it was all but gone because I didn't know anything about, you know, preparing the canvas and putting gesso on it so the paint wouldn't seep in and don't water the colors down too much, yeah, et cetera. So it's been a great learning experience, and I found I was having a heck of a lot of fun doing it. So I was doing it just for my own pleasure. Some people happened to see it, and they said, why don't you have a gallery show? So you know, I took them up on that, and one thing led to another. And then I started sculpting just to see if I could, you know, come up with something that would make me feel good. With, you know, I bought some, wax. I used to heat the wax in my kitchen. My wife was not crazy about that, but I would heat the wax and move it into, you know, various shapes that I thought were fun to look at. And then one afternoon, my wife and I were in Vancouver, B.C., and I went to Stanley Park, and I saw this incredible display of Indian totems. And I got inspired by that, and I started doing these symbolic totem poles for a while, that like 12-footers, and all of a sudden I was looking at them thinking to myself, well, that's okay stuff, but it's more like what they were doing, you know, years back and probably a lot better. Why don't I just riff on this thing and do these shapes and motions that make me feel good? And so it all led to me now, my last totem. It's not out of the foundry yet, but it's 18 feet high.
Wow.
And it's just filled with, you know, all sorts of rhythms and things that that feel good.
Yeah, I haven't been in the presence of your totems yet, but the photos I've seen of them, they're really powerful. There's something really powerful about them.
I've had tremendous feedback, and we just had a show right across the street from Lincoln Center in New York. So, I mean, things have been really great with that. I'm a lucky guy.
One of the other things that you're very much involved with is the Herb Alpert Foundation, which, lucky for all of us, the arts are your main concern, and you've been really supporting so many things. It seems to me that your major concern as far as the arts is concerned is education.
Well, education, the arts, I believe that arts in any form should be a core part of the curriculum. I don't think a child has a full-rounded education without touching on the arts. Because, I mean, whether you're painting, writing poetry, dancing, you know, making music with various instruments, whatever that happens to be, you realize that you just can't do it by thinking about it. You have to work at it. And little by little, you start finding your own uniqueness. And if you can find your own uniqueness, you might appreciate other people's uniqueness, and I think that that's a good thing.
Well, you know, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about creativity and age, because once people look at mathematicians and they say, you know, once they're 25, they've done their great work, and how has it been for you, and what things come out now that maybe didn't come out later? Earlier.
Well, you know, I'm getting more for less on the trumpet, for one. I understand the horn in a different way. And I think music feeds you. You know, it's like I have a jazz club here in Los Angeles called Vibrato, and one night we had Dave Brubeck, and Dave at the time was, I believe he was around 88 years old, and he, we announced him, and he started walking to the piano, and I thought he was going to fall off the stage. He was kind of like schlepping along, and then he sits down at the piano and starts playing like a kid. I mean, he was just like, you never knew, you had no idea how old he was. And he played for, like a good hour. And you could just feel that music was coming right through him. It was honest, it was him. He finished, got up, and he schlepped back up to the green room. And I went up there to see him. You know, he was all sprawled out on the couch. He had a great time. But, that energy that it gave him was feeding him like a good meal.
Mm. And this happened to you on stage?
Oh, yeah, definitely. After a show, people ask me, well, you must be really tired. I said, well, on the contrary, I feel pretty darn good.
Well, you and Lonnie Hall have a really ambitious tour coming up, and looking forward to that as well. And congratulations on this, on In the Mood. It sounds really great.
I appreciate it. Look, it's a whole different world now with exposing music. In the old days, you go up to a radio station and you go play a song or play a disc for the programmer, and if he liked it, he'd either put it on the air immediately or put it into the, whatever they have every week to decide on what records they're going to play. You don't find that now, so it's much tougher for artists to get exposed. And, of course, the Internet, if you know how to get around it, and you get lucky, there's your opportunity. But, radio's been pretty stingy with the types of records that they want to play.
Well, if you and Jerry Moss were setting out today, you would definitely be doing something different than just making records. But you'd probably be getting the music out there anyway.
Well, we would be. And to be quite frankly and totally honest, I think it's about timing. And I think the timing was so right for us in 1962. And the timing would probably not be right for us today with the same concept.
Well, thank you for your work in all different genres. And thank you for this album. And thanks for talking with us.
Hey, Dave. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Herb Alpert, our guest today on The World Cafe.